you be seated. The court is ready to hear oral arguments from the appellant in Ballingham v. State Co.
May it please the court, Mr. John Harrison will present argument for appellant. Appellants have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Appellants will divide their time with Mr. Andy Harrell, who will present argument for amicus curiae. Mr. Harrison will open for 10 minutes and will also present rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is John Harrison, and I represent Joe and Dolores Valandrin. And the issue here today concerns the scope of coverage afforded in the standard Texas homeowners HOV policy, specifically whether or not it provides coverage for foundation damage caused by plumbing leaks. I don't think there's going to be any dispute that the policy is supposed to provide the coverage and that insurance will pay for the coverage. The task here today is to see whether the insurance commission's intent that it provide this coverage appear in the document. I say that there are three very clear ways in which that intent manifests itself in the document. The clearest example is articulated by the insurance commissioner in the bulletin that he issued this summer related to the all-risk nature of the policy.
If it's so clear, why has every court that has considered the issue gone the other way?
I don't understand that the clearest argument...
A bunch of dense judges.
Well, the clearest argument I don't believe has ever been made. And if there's been a huge misdirection play focusing on whether or not there is an exception to an exclusion, which itself never really applied. And this particular policy provides coverage for your dwelling, and it provides coverage for your personal property, and there's separate policy limits for both of those, but the coverage for the dwelling is set forth right here, all risks of physical loss and recovery. I prepared a handout, which I know it's hard to read, and I prepared a handout so you can follow along. And I apologize for the red dot bouncing around. I can't do that under any circumstances. I guess not bouncing around. But the coverage A insures against all risks of physical loss unless there is an excluded peril, unless the peril operates to excluded loss. There is no exclusion which applies in this case. The appellee will have you believe that the exclusion H here excludes the coverage. But in fact, H is itself a peril. It's a peril which is excluded. It's not a type of loss. There are types of loss which are excluded.
It says loss.
Well, it says loss caused by the peril of, if you will, settling, cracking, bulging, shrinking, etc. And we're not alleging that any loss was caused by that damage itself. That is a type of damage that we're alleging is covered, not a peril of an ensuing loss resulting from that peril. The coverage simply, if to adopt that reasoning, that exclusion applies, then you effectively convert this policy into a fire policy. Because almost every damage that you have to your home that you can imagine consists of cracking of walls or roof structures, hail hitting the roof and cracking roof tiles, a tree falling on the house and cracking elements of the structure, a car careening out of control would cause cracking of the structure of the house. Similarly, a tornado will cause the type of damage described in that peril. It's very important in any insurance policy you insure against risks and to focus on the fact that it does matter what the peril is. And if the peril is not itself excluded, then there's coverage. And in this particular case, there is no exclusion for plumbing leaks.
So your argument, houses crack, walls shrink, and expand because of something. Because water is coming into the soil and then it gets dry, etc.
Exactly.
And you're saying if that happens because of plumbing, then it's covered. If it happens because of rain and drought, it's not covered.
I believe that the way that rain is going to cause you a problem is if you have improper drainage. And that's going to be excluded under inherent bias because it's a condition of the property which causes itself to damage itself. So most of the, or many of the types of foundation damage that you have will not be covered because of construction defects, which is an inherent bias, or improper design. But if it's caused by plumbing leaks, because that is one of all risks, it's covered. That's the clearest argument. It's one that should have been made. There are some cases.
And so you're asking us to look strictly at coverage A, that at that part of the provision and the exclusion section, and we should not be looking at the section titled coverage B, personal property, at all.
I don't think you need to. I'm going to ask you to look at it in a minute because that's the second place that the evidence of intent appears. I think it's important to note that coverage B is just the opposite of coverage A. Nothing's covered unless it's named. Coverage A, everything's covered unless it's carved out.
Well, what does H mean under your theory?
It means that that if you have a foundation that settles because of inherent vice or normal wear and tear or deterioration, one of the causes that are not covered or that are excluded under F, that's not covered.
Under which F? Well, what does H add? If that's covered under F, what does H mean? Your theory, H doesn't mean anything.
Well, essentially, if that is the cause of other damage, for example, if the house cracks and damages other property inside the building,
then
the damage itself has to, the settling or cracking or bulging itself has to cause a loss. And if that loss occurs, then it's not covered. That's the plain reading of exclusion H.
Is this policy ambiguous?
I don't believe it is. I don't believe it's patently ambiguous. I think there are parts of the policy that I cannot ascribe complete logical and explanation for, but I can give it some meaning. The construction urged by Abilene gives many aspects of the policy no meaning whatsoever. And the particular provision that it's difficult to give complete and total meaning to is the sentence here, exclusions 1A through 1H, under section 1 exclusions, do not apply to loss caused by this peril, referring to the peril of accidental discharge or plumbing. As I was saying before, under coverage A, everything is covered unless it's carved out. Either a peril is carved out or a type of damage is carved out. Under coverage B, there's no coverage unless it's specifically added. Every single, in the list of covered perils under coverage B, these 12 perils, every single one of those perils is necessarily included in coverage A because they're part of all risks. And none of those risks in coverage 12, in fact, are excluded as perils. There are types of damage resulting from them which are excluded. But the appellee would have you say that these 12 items have no bearing under coverage A. You have to put on your blinders, and you can't look at them in context of the entire policy, which is that those 12 perils are but a subset of all risks. Every single one of those 12 is included within coverage A. Now, they will tell you that the only reasonable explanation for the location of this sentence, which says that exclusion 1H doesn't apply to loss caused by plumbing leaks, the only explanation for that is to evidence an intent, which is not expressed in words, that sentence only applies to coverage B. There's another perfectly logical explanation for the location of that provision, is that it deals with the interplay between a peril and a list of exclusions. That peril is described once and only once in this policy, and it's described right there at number 9. There's no other place to talk about accidental discharge unless you create another paragraph, which doesn't seem necessary because of the structure of the policy where coverage A envelops the entirety of coverage B.
Of course, 1H only applies to coverage A.
Exactly.
So if the argument is that coverage B and coverage A are independent sets, one is not the subset of the other, then to say that the exclusion 1H doesn't apply to coverage B9 doesn't mean anything, because 1H doesn't apply to coverage B anyway.
In fact, most of the references in that sentence would have no meaning, not just the reference to 1H. Most of them would have no meaning because of the nature of coverage B, that you only cover these covered perils. You really don't carve out many perils in the exclusion provision which affect coverage B. Because if they're not added in the first place, there's no reason to take them back out. For example, under exclusion 1A, they don't cover loss to electrical devices or wiring caused by electricity. Well, electricity is never an included peril under coverage B. So that exclusion really has no effect on coverage B anyway. Similarly, with coverage E, mechanical breakdown is not a covered peril for coverage B. So there's no reason to say that exclusion doesn't apply to coverage B. It's got to apply to coverage A, if it applies at all. The other reason, other part of the structure which tells you that it is, the coverages are intermingled, is the sentence here, a loss resulting from this peril includes the cost of tearing out and replacing any part of the building necessary to repair or replace the system or appliance. What that typically means is that you have, you end up having to tear out part of the building in order to get to the leak, which isn't otherwise damaged, but it clearly refers to the dwelling. I've agreed to share my time with the Attorney General's Office representing the Department of Insurance.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
My name is Randy Harrell. I'm the Assistant Attorney General here today representing the Texas Department of Insurance. We have come to ask the court to take an unusual step today and to put aside the normal rule of construction for contracts of this nature, which would require the intent of the parties to be ascertained from the four corners of the document, and instead give life to a proposition first articulated by this court in 1954 in the case of U.S. Insurance Company of Waco versus Boyer. In that case, the court noted, as a practical matter, the actual intent involved in the precise words of construing an insurance policy is as much or more the intent of the insurance commission which prescribes the wording of the policy.
Why didn't the insurance commission fix this? We've had these cases out here for a long time that construe the predecessors of this policy. So there's been no, it's not been
actually
unknown to the insurance company what the construction was. Why didn't they clear it up?
It was fixed in the 1978 revisions to the policy, and when they undertook the 1990 rewording, it was simply to make the policies more readable, not to change any of the coverage, and they thought that they still had this thing fixed from the earlier decisions, the pre-1978 decisions. And in fact, the record will show, I believe, that all the insurance companies out there until, I guess, as recently as 1996, have operated under the assumption that this 1990 policy did cover these risks. They have paid for it. The losses have gone into the rate calculation of the benchmark rate. People are paying premium for this coverage in the state of Texas.
Do we have a record of that in this case?
And it's not the best of records because a lot of this is not available at the summary judgment level in the trial court. And what we have is some of this brought to the court through certified documents that we've requested the court to take judicial notice of records of other courts and of the Texas Department of Insurance. And I believe some of it is attached to the amicus brief of USAA in this case, a lot of the orders and Texas Register publications. And we would also cite the court to the Texas Register publications, which are out there.
Are you saying you're asking us to take judicial knowledge of things that were not before the trial court?
Yes, Your Honor, we have to do that. Unfortunately, the commissioner's bulletin and a lot of these matters were not even published at the time this case went through on summary judgment at the trial court level.
Instead of issuing a bulletin, why doesn't the department or the commissioner just undertake to revise the policy?
That is something that certainly could be done. That is not undertaken lightly, but it certainly is something that could be done, but it does not fix the problem for those who have paid for coverage and need that coverage and are not having those funds on today by a few companies.
Has any effort been made to do that yet?
I'm sorry?
Has any effort been made to change the policy?
Yes, there is some effort to change the policy. What has happened now is there will be an endorsement available to insurance companies who do not wish to provide this coverage, and I believe it will be available in about a year. Though we are not changing the policy as it stands, we still contend that it provides for this coverage. There will just be a new endorsement that will allow companies to opt out of providing this coverage. So we have not taken to change this form per se. We have just allowing those companies who do not wish to provide the coverage to do so through endorsement.
Mr. Harrison suggested at the beginning that it was uncontested that insurance companies had been charging a premium that considered the cost of repair and replacement foundations.
That's
so
correct.
That's not contested in the record.
That is not contested. The rates are calculated by the loss reports that these companies turn in. They've been paying these claims. They have turned in those losses as part of the calculation of the benchmark rate, and so we are paying premiums on those.
But some companies don't pay.
Don't pay the losses, but only since about 1996, Your Honor.
And so that's in the rate base also.
It is for the annual rate base for 1997, 1 year.
So
that just there, those few claims that they have not paid. And I wanted to make it clear that even these companies who quote are not paying are only not paying in selected cases. The majority of the cases they have been paying. Just very, very few claims that have been denied.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from Appley.
May I please report, Mr. Ryan Blakely, represent argument from the appellate.
May it please the court, Brian Blakely for Safeco Insurance Company of America. To start, I want to address this premium issue. There is no evidence in this record about what any insurance company charges for and what they don't charge for in the way of premiums. There is not even any evidence presented to this court in the material that has been filed by Amicus Curiae and other interested parties. What we have is a lot of argument from these parties that these types of losses are figured into premiums and premiums are charged for this type of loss. But you do not have word one in any document from the Department of Insurance or anyone else that says that a premium is charged for this type of loss and that it is, in fact, included in the premium.
Are these premiums regulated by the insurance department, the amount you can charge for this type of policy?
They are for some companies, Your Honor, and for some companies, they are not. It's my understanding that there are many policies, homeowners policies in the state, are written by what are known as Lloyd's companies. Those companies can charge whatever rates they want. If you're not a Lloyd's company, it's my understanding that you do have to rely on the benchmark rate.
Okay.
Is Safeco a Lloyd's?
This particular Safeco entity is not a Lloyd's company. There are other, Safeco does have a Lloyd's company that now writes most of its homeowners coverage in the state.
Mr. Blakely, going to my question that I was asking Mr. Harrison, it seems to be Safeco's position that coverage A and coverage B are independent coverages.
That is not only Safeco's position, it's the Fifth Circuit's position, and also at least four separate federal district courts.
And so 1H applies to coverage A.
Your Honor, the policy clearly states, if you look at the handout here, it's a little bigger, better blow-up of what they have, or a little easier to read. And you'll see the Section 1 exclusions at the top, and that's on page 2. They apply to both coverage A and coverage B. So by the literal terms of the policy...
H. H applies to coverage A, doesn't it? It says we do not cover loss under coverage A. I'm just reading the language in H. It just says it's referring to coverage A for what it does not cover.
That's correct.
Okay. So if B and A and B are separate coverages and A only applies to coverage A, then to say that the exception of 1H under coverage B only applies to coverage, that wouldn't make any, that'd be meaningless because H only applies to coverage A anyway.
It's not meaningless, Your Honor, because this peril number 9 is providing tear out and replacement coverage.
But you said B and A are separate coverages. They're independent coverages, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so they're independent coverages, then H only applies to coverage A. It doesn't apply to coverage B.
Essentially, I believe that 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 exception, and here again, you know, Safeco is not the drafter of the policy, it's the Department of Insurance, but I believe the reason that that exception is placed there is to avoid confusion about whether you're going to have coverage for cracked and bulging walls that are necessary to tear out and be replaced due to the plumbing leaks.
But
because that's...
But H is only implicated if there's coverage under coverage A. So if there's a bulging, if there's something that's the result of a plumbing leak, it's covered by coverage A, except for what happens under H, but then you come under 9 and it says, but H doesn't apply if it's a plumbing leak, so
right.
You've got coverage. Right?
Under 9, yes, you would have coverage if you have a personal property loss.
Well, no, but coverage H applies to coverage A, which is damage to the dwelling.
Correct. Now, I think the confusion is that within peril 9, peril 9 does involve repair and replacement and tear out of part of the dwelling within that limited aspect of peril 9, where they're talking about tear out and replacement coverage.
What does, if the commissioner has prepared the policy, what weight would Safeco give to his interpretation of what the policy covers?
Your Honor, I do not believe that any weight should be given if the policy is unambiguous. This court squarely addressed that issue in the National Union versus CBI case. At what point do you start looking to extrinsic evidence of intent? And the court clearly held there that if the policy is unambiguous, you do not look beyond the four corners of the document, and you simply apply the plain meaning of the words.
And that your claim is it's unambiguous and does not cover foundation damage.
Correct, Your Honor. And in fact, that's everybody's interpretation, is that it's unambiguous. But people have different interpretations of what it unambiguously means.
So that's frequently the case.
Yeah.
Some companies pay these claims.
Some companies have been paying them. Apparently, again, Your Honor, this is not something that's in the record, except through the amicus curiae briefs. Apparently, some companies have been paying them. Some haven't. I think most companies are sitting on the sidelines to see what happens with this decision.
Why do they pay non-covered claims?
I cannot speak for the industry. I know that in general, when these claims first began appearing in around 92 or 93, they seemed to blossom all at once. For 50 or 100 years, people didn't seem to have many problems with leaking pipes causing foundation damage. Then all of a sudden you had a host of these claims which started in Corpus Christi. At the time they started, the state of the law on extra contractual exposure was not as clear as it is now, and a lot of companies decided to negotiate these claims, pay some, settle some, and move forward essentially on all fronts at once. And one of those fronts was to litigate the issue and get a clear answer from the courts as to what this means. And only after there was a clear answer from the Sharp court did companies begin to deny these claims based on this exclusion.
But there's no dispute that if you have a plumbing leak and you have to tear out and replace part of the foundation to get out the plumbing leak, that's covered.
There is no question that is covered.
Do you disagree with the Attorney General's position that it is uncontested in this case that insureds have been charged for this coverage?
I do not believe that. No, that is not uncontested. First of all, it's not anywhere in our record. And no, that is not uncontested.
Just as background, aren't rates based on payments in the past?
It's my understanding that it is a retrospective analysis based on what has been paid in the past.
So if you've been paying these claims, to some extent, future rates are going to be based on those payments. If you quit paying the claims, then future rates are going to be based on that.
That's my understanding.
Prior to 1990, Is there any question that this was covered in your mind?
Yes, Your Honor, there is a question. You have essentially three different policies involved over the last several years. You have the pre-78 policy, which is similar in structure to the current policy. And then you had a policy between 78 and 90 that was different. In the 78 to 90 policy, which is the policy that was involved in the Nicolau case, there is an exception or language of exception that says these exclusions do not apply to accidental discharge. And that actually, the exception language actually appears in the Section 1 exclusions to make it a little more clear where they were meant to apply. There is, though, under that policy, no expressly clear intent to cover foundation damages. And I think the truth of the matter was that at the time that policy came into effect, it simply wasn't a big problem.
You know, are there any reported cases of a denial of this sort of claim under the 1978 to 1990 policy?
There are several bad faith type decisions involving such denials, such as the Nicolau decision. There's also the Telepac decision, which I think is cited in a footnote in our brief, and also the Price decision, which is cited in our brief. None of those cases, though, actually deal with the coverage issue. They are not ruling on coverage.
Now, let me ask you about the coverage. Under coverage A, we're in the exclusion H. Under the literal language, is it true, as one of the amici argued, that if a tree falls and cracks your walls, you don't have to pay? A tornado hits and causes a bulging or a cracking, you don't have to pay. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor, that's not correct. What they have done is taken extreme positions that have never been applied by any insurance company.
Well, I understand that, but I'm just talking about the literal language of the policy.
Under the literal language of the policy, you do not look to the remote cause of the loss. You look to the direct cause. And on the tree example, if you there are several on tree coverage. The removal of a tree that falls is expressly covered under another portion of the policy. Damage to personal property caused by a falling object.
Well, I don't want to talk about either one.
All right.
I just want to talk about the crack.
The crack in the roof. If you have a crack, if you have a tree that falls on your roof, and you want to look and see if exclusion H applies, exclusion H involves settling, bulging, shrinkage or expansion, and also cracking. It's not going to be any of those things. It's just going to be cracking at best.
Right. I just want to talk about a crack and we'll say roof structures.
If you pull that out of context and want to rely just on the cracking, if you have a gaping hole in the roof, that's not going to be a crack.
I'm just talking about a crack.
If you have a simple crack, that does not cause a leak, doesn't do anything, because water damage caused by a crack is going to be covered if it's ensuing loss. If it's just a crack and it doesn't do anything else, then under the literal reading of this exclusion, it's not going to be covered. If you have any ensuing loss whatsoever from water damage, that's going to be covered. If you have a gaping hole, that's going to be covered. But if you read the exclusion literally, then just the crack, if it doesn't damage anything else, is not going to be covered.
Well, what are the nature of these plumbing losses? If they don't cause, they have not caused a tearing out or replacing of any part, they just cause settling in the house for this.
What typically happens is that although there are different scenarios, what typically happens is there'll be a leak from a sewer pipe which will cause moisture to be added to the soil, which causes the soil to expand, which in turn causes the foundation to move. And this is where the remote causation argument on behalf of the TDI really fails.
When the foundation moves, I'm trying to gather the extent of the loss. It doesn't cause the house separated into two entities or a crack to appear in the wall that caused, that necessitates leaking, et cetera. That comes to, it doesn't get to that stage, or at least in these claims, it hasn't gotten to that
typically
stage.
Typically, it doesn't. No, typically the foundation is way out of level. There's always a big, or has been in the past, a big factual dispute in many cases about what caused the settling. And the settling will cause walls to crack. Typically, you do not have the intrusion of water from the outside.
Once you get intrusion of water, it's covered.
Absolutely. Yes. Now, if you rely on the remote causation argument that you don't look to the settling, you look to what caused the settling. That's what they're trying to argue here. You look to the cause of the settling. Well, in the typical case, if you take one step back, you have soil movement that has caused the foundation to move. If you take two steps back, you have a water leaking that has caused the problem. If you take three steps back, you have a deteriorated pipe that has caused the leak. So where do you stop? They would like you to skip the first step, which is soil movement, because that's excluded by exclusion F. They want you to rely on the second cause back, which is a water leaking. And then they want you to ignore the third step back, which is deterioration. And what logical reason is there to skip the immediate cause and go to the second cause, but ignore the third cause? And that's the problem that you get into when you start ignoring the direct causation. And this is not a new argument. This exact argument, the remote causation argument, has been made in several older Texas Court of Appeals cases and has been expressly rejected in those. For example, in the Bentley case, which is cited in our brief, the insured argued that he had a settling foundation, but it was caused by drought. And therefore, there was coverage because drought was not expressly excluded. And that's exactly the argument that the Department of Insurance is making here.
Isn't there a logical line between something that's caused by a defect or problem within the structure itself and something that's caused by an external force that's rather universal, like drought or excessive rain?
Yeah, that distinction can be made. It's not made anywhere in the policy. And the difficulty is that, and several courts have addressed this, is that you can always take a step back further. If you're going to look at remote cause, you can always go back far enough so that you can find a cause that's not going to be covered.
Given the trouble that the lawyers and judges and policyholders and insurance companies have had with this particular language, how could this court write that there was no ambiguity?
The courts have not ever had any problem with this language. No court has...
Well, Fifth Circuit did, because they were confused enough to ask us.
Your Honor, they were not. They issued a sharp decision, and they unequivocally held that the policy was not ambiguous and that there was no problem whatsoever with this policy language. When this case came before them, the insurance commissioner had issued his bulletin.
We also had our Nicolau.
You had the Nicolau opinion, Your Honor. But the Fifth Circuit became concerned, and the reason it sent this over here is because the insurance commissioner was directing insurance companies not to follow the Fifth Circuit opinion, and that they would be subject to disciplinary action if they did so. I think it is inaccurate to say that the Fifth Circuit ever expressed any concern about whether this policy was ambiguous. They emphatically rejected the notion that it's ambiguous. And no court has ever found it to be ambiguous.
Under the rules of the Fifth Circuit, I guess the prior decision is binding unless they embank.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, and I was a little confused procedurally as to how this question got here without an in-bank decision to send it, but that was not my call, obviously. So,
let me ask you a question on how this works. You're talking about water damage overcoming the exclusion under H. If there's a pipe that bursts in the house and causes the that's covered by coverage A.
Yes, sir.
Right. Even though under 9, there's that the discharge leakage of overflow of water is limited to coming from a heating or air conditioning system or household appliance. But you agree that if it comes from a pipe, as far as coverage A is concerned, that's covered if there's water damage.
Yes, Your Honor, because coverage A is all perils. You don't...
It covers whatever
happens.
Causes damage, except it doesn't cover damage that is cracking or bulging or shrinkage, right?
Correct.
So if I have a plumbing leak that causes something in my wall to settle and it cracks my wall, there's no coverage for that damage to the house.
There is going to be coverage if you have water damage. If water can't leak out of a pipe and do nothing but crack a wall. It's going to waterlog the sheetrock, stain the sheetrock, do other things to it, which is going to be covered water damage. If by some miracle the water leaked out and did nothing but cause a crack and did nothing else, then under the literal terms, the crack would not be covered, and you'd have to plaster it up just like homeowners do every day.
Where is the sheetrock get stained? Where is that in the process? Where is that covered?
It's not expressly discussed because it's covered because the coverage A is an all-risk coverage.
So you say that doesn't come under A, sheetrock staining?
Staining? No, Your Honor.
But bulging, but if the only evidence of water is that it causes the sheetrock to bulge or to shrink, that's not covered.
Under the literal terms, yes, Your Honor. But as a practical matter, those claims are handled as water damage claims because the water does cause
other damage.
Except
if it comes to a foundation that bulges or shrinks, then as a matter of course, that's not covered because of age.
Because of the direct application of age, yes, Your Honor.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Under the extreme position taken by Safeco, the position taken by them, which may be extreme, any kind of water damage is going to be excluded under coverage H. If you have a water heater up in the attic which leaks and causes the ceiling to bulge or sag, that's not going to be covered. If the water then travels down to the floor and causes your parquet floor to buckle, that's not going to be covered. There's literally going to be no damage which is covered other than fire, smoke, and explosion if you read the policy the way Safeco would have you read the policy. Appley asked or implied that we want you to ignore steps 1, 2, and 3. That's simply not the case. Typically what happens is a plumbing pipe, typically a sewer pipe, deteriorates through wear and tear, shifting of the soil, whatever reasons, oftentimes we don't know. That itself would be excluded except for the follow-up sentence which says they do cover ensuing loss caused by water damage as a result of ensuing loss after the deterioration of the pipe. It then causes the pipe to leak. The leak causes the soils to expand, and that damages the foundation. There is relevant case law, I believe, to the effect that the soils are actually part of the foundation. The foundation is not just the concrete slab. It includes the soils beneath it. But in any event, the T.R. Jones case, which I believe is cited in my brief, stands for the position that this exclusion, earthquake, landslide, or movement, does not envision the type of minor earth movement which causes underneath your house to cause foundation damage. What we're here today really is to determine, is there a reasonable interpretation of coverage in this policy? The committee, from the commissioner's bulletin, it's apparent and other items in the record, it's apparent that the committee that drafted this policy thought it was covered. The TDI thinks it's covered. The Attorney General thinks it's covered. the Texas House and the Texas Senate think it's covered because they enacted Article 5.35-2 of the insurance code, which allowed the commissioner to exclude this type of damage for houses over 10 years old. According to TDI, 317 out of 313 out of 320 insurers think it's covered because they're paying these claims. The homeowners think it's covered. Even Safeco thinks it's covered. They spent $30,000 investigating whether or not the plumbing leak caused the damage. How unreasonable is that interpretation?
Fifth Circuit doesn't think so.
Fifth Circuit,
federal district judges don't think so, and the El Paso Court of Appeals doesn't think so.
Well, the El Paso Court of Appeals in Zidon, which is, I don't think it's published, was not a case involving water damage or plumbing leaks. It was a case involving bad drainage, which is an inherent vice. But
what are the
Fifth
earth
Circuit,
movement cases?
Pardon?
What are the earth movement cases under?
I believe it's T.R. Jones. I can't remember off the top of my head. I'll submit a supplement to that if you wish. If the Fifth Circuit stood by its ruling in Sharp, we wouldn't be here today. They obviously had enough doubts about it to ask this court what the answer was.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. That concludes all the arguments on today's docket. These cases will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will adjourn the court.